Welcome, everyone, to We Have Issues, our weekly comic book podcast that opens the vault, feels the boom, bets on the dark horse, and marvels at every issue released this week. I'm your host, Keith, and I'm here to talk about all your favorite issues and publishers. It's a great week of comics, and I'm slowly catching up. I'm actually ahead of time this one, so very excited to talk about these comics and excited for the next week. And I do have a very special preview for a book that does not come out to this next week that you should definitely check out. We'll get to that in a bit, though. As always, when we start with our comic book reviews, we don't start with a bang. We start with a boom. Boom Studios is our first publisher, and I got several boom books this week. It's a big boom week. First of all, Man's Best number 2, written by Ponsak Pachote, illustrated and colored by Jesse Larnigan, and lettered by Jeff Powell. I'm really enjoying this book. I like the art. It's really like different, but really good, and it gives the characters a lot of character, personality, I guess. And I love the sci-fi nature of it. I love that we are, you know, exploring these characters in a really unfamiliar situation. I like taking something simple like a, you know, a homeward bound almost like journey and dropping it on another planet or something like that. And I like the conflict within the heroes, the not even struggle for power, but just the simpleness of the, I guess, canine and feline minds, specifically canine in this case, and them trying to focus and do the right thing when, you know, a lot of dogs are impulse control. And I think that's really true to the character. So very cool. Really liking it and want to see more. After that is Pine and Merrimack number 4. Oh, man. This is a big issue. Written by Kyle Starks, illustrated by Fran Gallant, lettered by Pat Brosseau. After our detective heroes escape that secret party that they're in, they're determined to solve the case, and she goes back in while he gets the cops. And she goes back undercover, and we kind of get a little bit more sprinkling of what's going on. And I think it's adding a really interesting, like, not just like a cult feel, but also like full on supernatural. Like, a cult could be just a belief that with no backing of, you know, facts. Whereas supernatural is starting to be like, oh, this is the thing. They're doing this for a real reason that actually works. So I thought that was really cool. And we had a really big shock at the end of the issue that I'm not going to spoil for you. But yeah, it definitely kind of puts everything into perspective. And it makes me wonder where we're going to go from here. Very good book. Really enjoying it. I love the art, I should say. Fran Gallant's art is just perfect. And it makes me love these characters. It really attaches me to them very quickly. So very good stuff. After that is The Expanse, Dragontooth, 11 of 12, Only One Left, written by Andy Diggle, illustrated by Francesco Pisa, colored by Francisco Segala with Gloria Martinelli, and lettered by Pat Brosseau. Everything with these terrorists, these undercover, Dragonteeth, I mean, that's the only way to call them, really, is starting to come unraveled. And the team, the Rocinante team, is kind of piecing it together. And I think, I mean, obviously, the main thing I want to talk about is my boy Amos. Amos is my favorite character. And I really like, he's so true to character in this. And I don't want to spoil it in case you haven't seen the show, because the show is amazing. But Amos is, he doesn't let emotion rule his decisions, is what I will say. And he very much does that in this case. I really like it. I think he's... oh, he's just one of my favorite literary characters, period. And this book, this series has done him a lot of justice. I will definitely have more next issue when it wraps up. Next up is Once Upon a Time at the End of the World 14. From what I understand, this is also a penultimate issue. Written by Jason Aaron, illustrated by Nick Dragotta, colored by Rico Renzi. Additional illustrations by Alexander Tafingi and Leila Del Duca, colored by Lee Luffridge and Tamara Bonvillain, with letters by End World Design. Yeah, so... it's all coming down to this. Like, this is apocalyptic world ending shit with Mezzi and Mace. And yeah, I mean, I don't know how we're going to get out of it. If we're going to get out of it, this might be the end of the world. I do like the fighting, obviously, is great, and the whole conflict and everything is really good. But the real key to this issue is the exploration of the relationship and what happened. Like, the falling apart of their relationship, you know, oh, let's blame it on the haze, the gas, you know, it made us crazy. But, I mean, things weren't great before then. There were problems. And especially in relationships, if you have a small problem and you ignore it, it becomes a bigger problem. And it's really great. It's a really great way to say that in this weird post-apocalyptic world with these great characters. And just a really great dichotomy between, you know, fighting these crazy mutant dudes versus, you know, you stop saying goodnight to me. Like, that's just really, it was really heartbreaking when I read that. So I love this book. One of my favorites. And I will hate to see it go, but man, it really did a great job while I was here. After that is Something Is Killing the Children 36. I'm so glad to get back into Something Is Killing the Children. We've been doing the House of Slaughter thing after the last arc, and yeah, just getting back over to it, I think, is really good because I think it's good timing. Written by James Tynion IV, illustrated by Wirtho De Ladera, colored by Mikhail Muerto, and lettered by N World Design. This is the beginning of an arc called Road Stories, and from what I understand, it's going to be like one-shots from Erica's history as a hunter. And I think that's a great idea. I really want to explore more of her past. It also enables us to see characters that we don't get to see anymore, like Aaron. I really like that. So this one was a really great idea. It's a great example of Erica standing her ground, Erica having instincts beyond her age and maybe something that the other people don't necessarily trust, but that she sticks by. And I think that's really cool. I really enjoy this. One of my favorite books. Again, Boom is killing it as always, but yeah. So make sure to pick it up and follow the House of Slaughter story because it's getting really, really good too. And hopefully we get these two tying in together again one day. Fingers crossed. So next up, we're going to talk about another publisher, Dynamite Comics. Now, I didn't get any Dynamite books this week. There was none on the wall, but what I did get was a special sneak preview. I did tease that at the beginning. This is Space Ghost number 1. Written by David Popose, art by Jonathan Lau, color by Andrew Dollhouse, and letter by Taylor Esposito. I can't wait to talk about this book. Now, here's the thing. There's no embargo. I can talk spoilers. It's perfectly fine. But I'm not going to, because I really want you to pick it up. I'm going to give you impressions my impression of the book, and which is that it's really great. It's a really cool, like, how do I put this? It's filtered in a way that if you didn't know what was happening, you wouldn't be sure it was a Space Ghost book until about halfway through. The first actual shot of Space Ghost is so sick and so awesome. Like, the art in general is just really, really cool. And it does have one of the iconic villains in this first issue, so you don't have to worry about that. But it sets up a really cool arc, sets it up, and definitely gives us a place to go. I really like this book. I love everything that David Popose does, so I mean, that's not much of a secret. But I thought it was really cool. And Space Ghost is one of my favorite, one of the heroes I grew up on. The only thing is, and this isn't even a criticism, I love this book, but part of me really wanted like just a Space Ghost coast to coast reference somehow. And I know that's ridiculous in the tone of this book, it wouldn't make any sense, but I love Space Ghost coast to coast. It's one of my favorite things ever. But maybe a little mini comic drawn by the Calvin and Hobbes dude at the end. Yeah, there you go. So love it. But otherwise, just amazing book. 100% recommendation. Pick it up. All right. Next publisher is Titan Comics. And if it's Titan, you know it's Conan the Barbarian. This is number 10. And creative team is written by Jim Zub, art by Rob De La Torre, colors by Diego Rodriguez, lettering by Rich and Comicraft's Tyler. I really like this issue. I like the pivot away and the random time travel. It seems like every time I read a Conan book, he's just thrown through time, which I think is hilarious. But the random time travel to get him to another time and accepting a fight that's not his because he doesn't really have anything to do. He's stranded. You know, he has a destiny. We all know that Conan has a destiny to get to, but while he's here, he might as well fight. And it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy it. It's definitely a fun pivot from the last arc, which I loved, but it was kind of dark, visibly dark sometimes too, which I thought was really good, but yeah. And this one has promise of like something really cool and unique, and I dig it. So big thumbs up. I love everything Conan that Titan's been doing. They're just really killing it, and you should read it too. All right. Next up, we're going to talk about our next publisher, which is IDW. I got two IDW books this week. First of all, Saturday Morning Adventures Dungeons & Dragons number 4. This is the conclusion to this run. Written by David M. Boer. Art by George Compadeus. Letter by Ed Dukeshire with colors by John Paul Bove. It does wrap up. It was really cool because the last issue kind of wrapped up the story in that the kids were looking for this healing staff to heal Dungeon Master. And I was like, oh, okay, we still have an issue to go. What's going to happen in that issue? And the answer is a lot. We do get to see them face off against their arch nemesis and come to the conclusion that they're not able to heal Dungeon Master. But, you know, I'll go spoiler on this one. So spoiler alert. Basically, he is able to send them home by sacrificing his own life. And it was really interesting. There's like this really great moment where they're making the decision. And I'm not going to spoil the very ending for you. It's really good. I've loved this book, both volumes of it. I need another volume. The first volume came out and I said straight up, give me more. When is it coming back? And we got more. So maybe if I say it again, maybe if I keep saying it forever, I will get this comic forever. So if anyone at IDW is listening and the whole creative team, please keep making this book. I love it so much. So yeah. My other IDW book is The Ministry of Compliance number 5. Oh man. Okay. Written by John Ridley, art by Stefano Raffale, colored by Lee Luffridge, lettering by Ariana Mayer. Everything changes. Like, there's the entire series has been about this, like, playing one side against the other struggle and being a double or a triple agent and who can actually trust who. And the cards are kind of laid on the table at the end of this, and we kind of see where the lines are drawn. And man, it was really good. Not something I saw coming, but very logical. It makes sense. It's not something that I thought was a reach. I thought it was really cool and really well done. It makes me so interested to pick up more. From what I understand, there will be more. It does hit into part one. I hope there's more because I love this book. And yeah, I can't recommend it enough, but I don't want to spoil anything because it is a conclusion and something you should experience for yourself. So, all right. Next up is another publisher. Let's start with Dark Horse. I got a couple Dark Horse books this week. It was a Dark Horse heavy week. First of all, Star Wars, The High Republic Adventures, number 5. And this one's written by Daniel Jose Older, illustrated by Elisa Romboli, colored by Michael Atea, and letters by Tyler Smith and Jimmy Betancourt of Comicraft. I loved this book. This is the more kids-fronted High Republic series as opposed to the normal one that goes through Marvel. But a lot of times I find myself liking this one more. I love the cast. I love when it was about the Padawan Academy. That was probably my favorite arc. I really like those characters. And the fact that all that building they did during that era is paying off here is just really great. I really appreciate when things like that happen. This is, of course, all these different Force users being held in a prison, about to be executed, and the heroes have to save them. And it's a really cool jailbreak sequence with some real tension, some real, like, everybody might not make it out of here kind of thing. And I really dig that. Really good book, great addition to the High Republic, and yeah, I just love absorbing all of the High Republic stuff right now. I think it's amazing, so good stuff. Next up is Dawn Runner number 2. This one is written by Ram V, art by Evan Cagle, colors by Dave Stewart, and letter by Aditya Bidikar. After the last issue where this pilot piloted this mech to fight this monster, and something happened, something unusual, we're kind of get a follow-up as to what it is. And we get a cool revelation of like what makes this mech different. And it sets up like a really cool concept moving forward. I know we might have like 100 mech versus monster stories, but I think this one is doing a very good job of distinguishing itself and making itself special. I love this book. I think it's really cool. It's definitely something I would recommend you pick up. Yeah, great stuff. And it's Ram V. I mean, you can never go wrong with Ram V, right? Everybody loves Ram V. So, final Dark Horse book of the week is If You Find This, I Am Already Dead. And this book is my book of the week. So this book took me by surprise because it's not something I really heard about until it actually came out. And now it seems like it is wrapping up with three issues. And it's a good self-contained story. It's something I would definitely recommend, especially if you like a good sci-fi tale. Scripts by Matt Kent, art by Dan McDade, colors by Bill Crabtree, and letter by Jim Campbell. You might remember this as we found an alternate universe and they've been sending soldiers over and such. And in this group, they sent over a reporter as well. And it's following that reporter after they get stranded there when everybody else in the group dies. And it takes a really cool turn where it's been all about survival. We get to see a bit more behind the scenes, get more behind what happened to the reporter beforehand. And maybe they're there for more than one reason. And I thought it was excellent. Really good series. I like the world we've crafted, not just by the world, I mean this alternate universe, but the world of storytelling that has been crafted here. And it's definitely something that I could see doing more with. This story is wrapped up very satisfactorily, and it's something you might really enjoy. But if it came back, if we came back to this world, I wouldn't be upset with that. So yeah, big, big thumbs up for this one. My book of the week. If you find this, I'm already dead. Number three. And with that in mind, we're going to move on to another publisher today. Let's talk about Distillery. Big fan of Distillery. They've been putting out some really great stuff, and I got two books this week. I think it's my first two-book week for Distillery. First of all, Blasphemous, number two. Story, art, and colors by Mirka Andolfo. Color assistance by Gianna Luca Papi. And letters by Maurizio Clozzi. This book is so cool. We get to find out more about the backstory of what's going on here. Like, how did we get here? What's the purpose of all this? And it's really twisted. For those who don't remember, it's this world where these celebrities are essentially religious icons. And there is a revelation that basically heaven has been destroyed and only hell is left. And hell is using these celebrities to generate, you know, this energy. And there's no good in the world. Essentially, it's really dark. And the main character, we get to delve into her background and figure out more about why she's damaged, what's happening to her. And at the same time, we get introduced to a new character that steps in and throws a serious wrench in the works. And I'm just so curious as to see what's going to happen there. But great book. I really like this. I love Mirka's stuff. I always have. But this is just special on its own. After that is the number one from Distillery, Spectrograph number one. Written by James Tynan IV, illustrated and colored by Christian Ward, and lettered by Aditya Bidikar. I'm going to be quite frank with this book. It's absolutely terrifying, and I love it. There's so much dread in the art in the best way possible. I really love the main character, who is also incredibly flawed. She could easily be dislikable, but she's not. It's a really fine balance to dance, and I think James did an amazing job in the writing, and the art from Christian Ward actually really helps that balance. There's something about the way she's drawn. There's something about the way you see what's on her mind. I'll give a slight spoiler that she had to leave her son behind to go on a job, anticipating only being gone like an hour or two, and it's going to be longer, and how that lingers in her mind, and also the sheer creepiness of what's about to happen to them. The art is insane. It's absolutely frightening and terrifying. I love it. Big recommendation from me. Runner up for book of the week. It was really close, but I really, really like it. And I think you will too. All right. That brings us to our next publisher, which is Vault. I got the one Vault book this week, and it's a number one. Let's talk about Deathstalker number one. So full title, it looks like, Slash presents Deathstalker, The Return of the Last Great Warrior King. Written by Tim Seeley, art by Jim Terry, colored by Kurt Michael Russell, and letter by Ann World Design. From what I've been able to read, this is a first step in kind of like a relaunching of the multimedia world of Deathstalker. And for those not familiar, it's really tongue-in-cheek and fun, like adventuring tale, like your Conans or something like that. But definitely with a different aesthetic and definitely with a real good sense of humor, which matches Tim Seeley's writing perfectly. I think it's a really match made in heaven. I like the first issue. I did see Deathstalker when I was a child, too young to see it. I should tell you that. I believe, and I haven't seen it in years, and I could not recollect much of it until I read the book. Now I want to watch it again. I think it's going to be really great. And I definitely know a friend who would love to watch it with me again. So that might be our project over the weekend. I think that might be a good idea. So yeah, really, really cool. Oh wow, this was made the year I was born. So great. yeah, so pretty excited about that. But yeah, whether you're new to the series, I think you should check it out. Or if you're an old fan, it's definitely a worthy successor. I've seen a lot of really good praise for it online. So check it out. All right, next up is Image Comics. And we'll dive into the Image world with The Six Fingers, number 3. Written by Dan Waters, art by Sumit Kumar, color by Lee Lefridge, and letter by Aditya Bedekar. This is probably my favorite issue of the two series. Between The Six Fingers and The One Hand, this is probably my favorite issue so far. It kind of changes the paradigm. It changes how things work. Things get a little creepier. Things get a little more unexplained, but explained at the same time. We get to dive a little deeper into a character that's not one of our main two characters, and I think that's really interesting. And it makes me question what is real in this world, I guess, is the best way to put it. Big recommendation. Really, really like it. Just such a crazy thrill. So good. Definitely worth picking up if you haven't. Make sure to pick them both up and read them concurrently, because that's the way to experience this story. After that is Feral, number 2. Written by Tony Fleeks, art by Tris Forstner and Tone Rodriguez. Color by Brad Simpson. And I don't have a letterer listed. Okay. So let me be clear. I interviewed Tony and Trish for Stray Dogs. And our response was like, why are you doing this to us? It's so good, but it's so sad. Like, it's just, this one is really good, but I'm so terrified of what's going to happen. Because I remember Stray Dogs, and I remember what that did to me in Josue. And it could happen again, but it's so good. If you guys want like a Don Bluth art style with a dramatic, really serious, potentially fatal story about animals, this is it for you. Unlike Stray Dogs, this is about cats, and it's absolutely brutal. Like, it's really good, but it's a mood, I guess, is what the kids say. It's a mood. After that is Duke, number 5. Written by Joshua Williamson, art by Tom Riley, color by Jordi Belair, and letter by Russ Wooton. This is the wrap-up of the Duke mini leading into the new G.I. Joe portion of the Energon universe. We won't talk too much about it. Really, it's just kind of setting up where we're going, which is Duke's death being faked in order to recruit him into a new system, ostensibly to fight the Transformers, is what it looks like, but also to fight what is going to be Cobra, I'm sure. Very cool. I'm very curious to see, once Cobra Commander wraps up, how these two kind of come together and what the overall G.I. Joe book is going to look like, but very good stuff. And the final Image book is World Tree, number 9. This one is written by James Tynion IV, art by Fernando Blanco, color by Jordi Belair, and letter by Aditya Bedekar. Oh, man. It's so difficult to review World Tree because I don't know what to tell you other than it's really good. And that makes me a bad critic if I just say, it's good, pick it up. No, I need to give you reasons, but sometimes it's the amazing over-the-top drama and like absolute dread in the book that sells this book for me. Sometimes it's just the character work. And I think this issue was a character work one, diving specifically onto one character, or two characters technically, and just exploring them, exploring their motivations, exploring how they fit into this was really fascinating. It does have some side bits, including a certain confrontation with a certain naked woman. And I think that was interesting to build on. But yeah, I don't know, man. This book is just one of the best. And if you're not reading it, what are you doing? World Tree is just incredible. Read it. All right. Time to start the big two. And let's start with DC. First up, Green Arrow, number 11. This one is the second part of that attack on, or with Team Arrow teaming up all the members, basically except Black Canary. teaming up to steal something from a Justice League headquarters. Written by Joshua Williamson, art by Sean Exoxy, Phil Hester and Eric Gapster, colors by Romulo Fardo Jr., and letter by Troy Pateri. I just love seeing the Arrow family together, most of them, that is. And specifically to just see Ollie team up with both Connor and Roy, all three characters that really mean a lot to me in the DC universe, and to kind of get where they're coming from, why they're doing what they're doing, and to really focus on the background and conflict with Merlin is what this all is about. And this is why Ollie is willing to make a deal, you know, make a deal with the devil, unfortunately. And it's really interesting. I'm very curious to see what we're going to go from here, because it does end in a pretty cool, like, high note, like cliffhanger. And yeah, I want to see what's going to happen, what Merlin's going to do. And is Merlin going to be a part of this new Waller thing that's going on? Because Waller is everywhere right now, as we all know. And so is it going to be tied into it, or is this like a side thing? We'll see. After that is Flash number 8. This one is written by Cy Spurrier, art by Ramon Perez and Vasco Georgiev, color by Sophie Dodgson and Matt Herms, letter by Hassan Atsmani Alhao. This one's really great. It's very action-packed, and it's about a series of natural disasters all over the Earth, and Barry just struggling to keep them all contained. But it's kind of like an interesting that all these natural disasters, what a coincidence that they're all happening at once, and the members of the, you know, Flash family are like handling it, and Barry's like so preoccupied doing all this that at the same time Amanda Waller happens to, you know, break into Terrifatech with a warrant and take some stuff. I've said it before and I'll say it again. I'm so sick of Amanda Waller. The character used to be fine, but now she's in every issue of DC Comics almost, and it's driving me crazy. I just wish we would get to this arc where she's going to try to take over the DC universe and fails, because it's kind of dragging the other books down, just having her in everything, especially because I'm not a big Peacemaker fan. It's fine, I guess. So we'll see. But the Flash portion, very cool. I really like it. I like the idea of Barry wearing himself thin, wondering how Wally kept up with all this. I thought that was really cool. And I love the Flash family, so seeing all of them is really great as well. Next up is Harley Quinn 39. I dropped my phone. Harley Quinn 39, where Harley has decided on her new path in life, which of course is helping other supervillains understand their damage. And she already did it once. Now she's looking for a new patient. She starts off with Mr. Freeze in this, but he absolutely, of course, refuses to accept help because he's Mr. Freeze. So she ends up with Maxie Zeus. This one, of course, is written by Teeny Howard, art by Natasha Bustos, color by Nick Filardi, and letter by Steve Wands. I think it's fun. I think it's a really great idea. I always like a story where Harley is actually using her intellect and using the fact that she does this for a living and she's very good at it. I think some writers would ignore that, and I think that's to the detriment of the character, and I think Teeny's doing a really good job here. My only slight criticism is I do like Harley when she is a little bit more clear-cut redeemed hero or anti-hero, whereas she is dabbling back in villainy a bit here. But it is kind of pointed out that she is, and I'm wondering how deep she's going to go. It might be a really good story. So it's not even a criticism, it's just a curiosity. I'm curious to see what's going to happen there. But yeah, I'm 39 issues into a Harley Quinn run. Who would have ever known that I would have made it this far into Harley Quinn and be loving it? So very good. Next up is Detective Comics 1084. He's back. Written by Rom V. Art by Javier Fernandez. Colored by Dave McCaig. And lettered by Ariana Mayer. So Bruce has come back to Gotham. And Gotham has changed while he was gone. And it's very interesting because, you know, Gotham is a place with a lot of damage. Gotham is a place that a lot of people consider to be unrepairable, considered to be a wasteland, somewhere that you don't want to live. And that's when it's under Bruce's control. And it goes back to the idea, of course, the freedom versus, you know, safety. Like, how much freedom do you give up for safety? And with Bruce gone, the town certainly seems a lot safer, but you look under the rocks, see what's going on. It gets a little darker. It's very interesting. It's very Assassin's Creed with the Templars and the Assassins. I really like this. I love the Talia in it, because I love Talia. She's a character I absolutely adore. And I love that Bruce is kind of in a love triangle again. Like, it kind of appears that way to me. It definitely seems to be like he is more favorable to Talia than he usually is. So we'll see there. But big thumbs up. Really enjoying that. I'm glad he's back from his existential journey, because I think if that went on a little too longer, I wouldn't really liked it very much. But we're back, and I'm ready to kick some ass. So great. Final issue for DC is Power Girl 8. This one is written by Leah Williams, penciled by Eduardo Pensica, inked by Julio Ferreira, and lettered by Becca Carey. This is a tie-in to House of Brainiac, in which Paige is one of the few people who are allied to Superman who is not taken by Brainiac's group. And Superman basically says, it's because you're not from this Earth. They don't identify you as someone of interest. And so, whereas he needs to go get his people back, she says, I will take care of Metropolis. I will take care of everything here. And is left to do so. She runs across Crush, who she doesn't know. Crush, former Titan, who is the daughter of Lobo. And there's like a superhero misunderstanding conflict brewing, which is immediately interrupted by a bunch of Zarnians as well, that they're going to have to seemingly team up to take out. I love Crush. It's one of my favorite DC characters from the past, you know, several years. I think she's amazing. I loved the run in Titans Academy, even though she didn't really get a great run there. I really liked the recent crossover with her and Lobo. So to see her get a spotlight here, I really enjoy it. And I think Leah writing it is going to be a lot of fun. Playing these characters off of each other is a really good idea. We also get the revelation that Omen was taken as well. So that adds, you know, a bit of jeopardy for Paige as well. So good stuff. All right. Now we're moving on to our final publisher of the day, which, of course, is Marvel. Marvel Comics. Let's go through it. I got a stack, guys. So let's go through quick. Night Thrasher 3. Not going to talk too long because it is an issue 3. Kind of right in the middle of the story. Written by Jay Holtham. Art by Nelson Daniel. Color by Matt Mee and letter by Travis Lanham. Dwayne helps take down Rage's, you know, gang that is trying to control the streets. And he does, and he feels good about himself. And then he starts to see, like, did he do the right thing? Was either side of this conflict really right? And was him taking a side what decided it? And he has to kind of wrestle with his responsibility in that. And I think that's a really interesting angle. I continue to love how much Silhouette is being used in this series, because I love Silhouette, one of my favorite characters from the New Warriors. I think she's really cool. And him trying to find, not just trying to fix things, but trying to fix things the way he would. I think it's really in character the way he is acting, and the kind of, like, I don't know the word for it, naivete of how easily he could probably just fix it when it's not that easy. None of this is easy. And also facing the decision of folding his foundation and how that changed the neighborhood, how he might have contributed to this. All very good stuff. Really good book. I'm really digging it. After that is Blade 10, the finale. Written by Brian Hill, art by Elena Casagrande, colored by KG Diaz, and lettered by Cordy Petit. This is the final battle between Blade and the Adana. And I thought this was dope. I thought the fight itself was really cool. There's a lot of, like, panels with very minimal dialogue during the fight because, you know, there's not a lot of quipping. It's really kind of brutal and violent, and I really dig it. And spoiler alert, it's the final issue, and the Adana is about the end of the world, so Blade has to win. But the way he wins, I thought was really sick. I thought it was really cool and, like, a really good idea to wrap up a character's arc is what I'll say. But yeah, I really liked this. I can't wait for more Blade and Blood Hunt. I saw some people upset. They use this as an example of, like, you know, there's no more long runs in comics. It's hard to get invested. Like, my thing is, right, a bunch of short runs and a long run are kind of the same thing. It's just the numbers reset. And it's kind of in your mind. Yes, the creative team might change, but that happens in long runs a lot. If a creative team changes at number 15 and starts and takes over at 16 and keeps going, I don't see people complaining, but I see people complaining when there's a number one. And I don't know. It just feels disingenuous to me. I really like this. I'm pretty sure it was planned to be the 10 issues. I'm sure they would have had ideas to go further if they wanted to, but it was a great 10 issues, and why can't we just be happy about that? So, all right, after that is Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, number 3, written by Steve Orlando, art by Lorenzo Tometa, color by Frank William, and letter by Ariana Mayer. so much fun. So we get a tease that the wizard has this mysterious benefactor that we don't see. And I'm so curious to see what it's going to be. But we also get Wanda and Pietro back together, even though they're still kind of like picking at each other because that's who they are. And also using speed and vision. Like, there's a lot of great... I realize that when I say using speed and vision, you might think I'm saying using their speed and their vision. No, I mean the characters' speed and vision in the story are really, really great. And I'm digging this. I really loved the last run of Scarlet Witch, and to know that she's getting another run after this mini is going to be really cool. A character that I thoroughly enjoy, and I hope to see more of in the future. I love that she's on the Avengers right now, which we'll talk about in a bit. Big thumbs up for me. Great work with her overall. After that is Daredevil number 8. Okay, so this is the 60th anniversary, and I cannot possibly fit all the creatives on Twitter tag, so I'm going to read them now. Writers: Saladin Ahmed, Ann Nesenti, DJ Chichester, Elsa Johnson, and Erica Schultz. Art by Aaron Cooter, Tommaso Bianchi, Stefano Raffali, Ken Lashley, Eric Koda, John Bazadua. Colors by Jesus Aberdov, D. Cuniff, Juan Fernandez, Ceci De La Cruz. Letters by Clayton Cowles, and a bus of bonus comics at the end by Ty Templeton. A lot goes on in this issue, and it is an awkward part to have the 60th anniversary because we're right in the middle of this story about Matt's sins. And I do like this issue a lot, though, where we take this break, where we step in and talk about Elektra for a bit. I like him getting back together with Elektra as far as like working together and kind of addressing that, because it was kind of left out there when he died. I mean, they were married, they were in love, and he comes back and he's like, well, I'm a priest, so I can't be married. And yeah, that's true, I guess. But as a non-Catholic, I'm just like, I really enjoy it. There's a lot of great stories in here about the Daredevil, the world around Daredevil and the characters around him. We get to check in with Foggy briefly. We get a tease for an Elektra series I think is going to be really, really good. Just overall, just a great book. Daredevil's always, knocks out of the park, so big thumbs up. And yeah, good stuff. Next up is Gods number 7. Oh my gosh, this book. This book is so good while telling us nothing. And that's a true skill to do that. Written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Valerio Schiti, color by Marta Gracia, and letter by Travis Lanham. So we get to finally check in with Dimitri. We get a story from Dimitri's point of view and what Dimitri is even doing here. Like, we do know some things about Dimitri, but it's like, what's Dimitri's motivation? What are they doing here? We do know that Dimitri is an envoy of the natural order of things, but why? And we basically get Dimitri's entire backstory in this issue. And it's really cool and compelling, and it's very psychedelic Marvel. Like, it's very like the weirdest Doctor Strange shit. And I think it's really cool. This book has been amazing and completely different than anything else Marvel's putting out in this universe. Wynn is already one of my favorite characters in Marvel, for the past couple years. I really like this, and I'm so curious to see how it's going to tie together. And the mystery of the acronym, what does God stand for? That's still floating out there. I saw someone in the letter columns kind of threw out an idea behind it, and I think that's interesting. So we'll see. All right, last mainline Marvel is The Avengers number 13, which is technically part of the Fall of the House of X. So, written by Jed McKay, art by Francesco Mortarino, colored by Federico Blee, and letter by Corey Petit. I loved this issue. I had a tiny reservation in the last issue, which was just that I always liked 3D Man, and I thought it was weird that he was working for the bad guys. He was kind of lame, like a lame character, and I love lame characters. So I was like, no, that sucks. But I think, trying to be spoiler-free, this does a really good job of redeeming that idea and rewarding me for the fact that I actually like the character. So very cool to see the Avengers just go whole hog on Orcus and just wipe out a bunch of Sentinels. I thought it was really cool. And the part of Orcus that they fight, of course, is MODOK, technically, which I really enjoy. That makes a lot of sense with the Avengers. Great stuff. Really enjoyed this book. Love seeing the Avengers finally stepping up and helping the X-Men. Obviously, they do the whole thing with, you know, Iron Man being like, I asked you to wait, now let's go. It's a good way to explain it away. So, great stuff. Big thumbs up. Next up is Spider-Punk, number 3. Written by Cody Ziegler, art by Justin Mason, colors by Morio Hollowell and Rico Renzi, and letter by Travis Lanham. In this one, Otto is like stepping up, and he's like, he's took out Hammer and now he's going to do everything himself. And he introduces this super mega, what was it? Spider Slayer Prime, the Octo Warrior, the Great Sentinel Octo Warrior. So good. I love how over the top this stuff is. But Riri gets up from her hospital bed to come join the fight. She doesn't come alone. She brings a surprise that makes our boy Spider-Punk quite happy. And I really like this. I thought it's fun. I just love the Spider-Punk like aesthetic. I love these characters. I think they're fun. I love Matea Murdock especially. And Riri is really great. I like this version of Captain Marvel, or Miss Marvel, I should say. Just great stuff. Lots of fun. A spider book is always fun. It's always worth picking up. Next up is Superior Spider-Man 6. This one is written by Dan Slott, or a story by Dan Slott, written by Christos Gage, penciled by Mark Bagley, inked by John Dell and Andrew Hennessy, colored by Edgar Delgado and lettered by Joe Caramagna. This one is interesting because I guess it was instinctually, I thought this was going to be a 6-issue mini, but no, it's going to keep going. And it's continuing the story of like Otto dealing with the repercussions of when he took over Peter's body. And like I said, the repercussions of this, but him both working with Peter, but also working against him because Otto's going to Otto. He's not going to be a good guy for too long. And folding in Bailey, I thought was an interesting idea, and the way they did it and just kind of like transforms the threat and spins it. I thought that was really interesting. And I'm curious to see how long this is going to go. Like probably a 12-issue mini, maybe an 8 or a 10, but it's been really good so far. I like re-exploring the Superior Spider-Man story from a different angle where Otto doesn't, you know, win the body of Peter, where he's just like, no, I'm not strong enough. You are the Superior Spider-Man, but doesn't mean he's not going to be a dick about it. So I big thumbs up for me. Next up, Ultimate Spider-Man number 4. This is my Marvel book of the week, in case anyone cares. It should be very clear in a moment why. Written by Jonathan Hickman, guest artist David Messina, colored by Matthew Wilson, lettered by Corey Petit. I've liked Ultimate Spider-Man, but I think a lot of people... The praise I keep seeing is people just being like, oh, Peter's back with Mary Jane again. And they seem to just be in love with the concept of it and not the execution. They're not talking about why, the specifics. Just, oh, yeah, he's back. He has a family. Good. Now, Mary Jane's not with what's his name anymore. Like, that's mostly what I'm seeing. And I don't think a lot of people are really talking about the story. And so it's been interesting to try to like find critique of the story because no one's talking about it. I've enjoyed Peter being this brand new starter hero and trying to find his legs. I think it was really interesting. I also really like this introduction to his version of Harry Osborn. I think that was really good. This issue throws a twist where Harry invites Peter on a double date. And I don't know who I expected. But of course, Peter brings his wife, Mary Jane. And Harry brings his wife, Miss Gwen Stacy. And when I tell you, I put the book down for a moment when I saw her because I was like, that son of a bitch. Harry Osborn, you did it. You did it, sir. You completed the dream of every nerd everywhere. You were able to marry Gwen Stacy. And it's really cool. It's a different Gwen Stacy. She's more aggressive. She's got a really like business attitude because she's the one running Oscorp. And I'm very curious to see what's going to happen here because there's a great interaction between the two couples. But there's obviously like a personality difference. And I'm wondering what's going to happen there. This is the best hook this series has given me so far, is this interaction. I love the book. I think it's really cool, but I'm very hooked with this and I'm very curious to see what's going to happen. So let me know what you think. Next Spidey book is Jackpot and Black Cat number 2, written by Celeste Bronfen, art by Emilio Lyso and Giada Belviso, colored by Brian Reber and letter by Ariana Mayer. Oh, man. I'm not going to spoil it because there's a really great twist in this issue, but for those of us who've been really enjoying MJ and Black Cat teaming up and, you know, doing things together, working together over the past several books, I mean, Felicia's going to Felicia, guys. I don't know what to tell you. Like, I love her. She's one of my favorite Marvel characters, period. Easily top 5. And God, just so good. That's all I got to tell you. It's so good. Pick it up. I can't sell this to you. It's fantastic. I love MJ being a hero. I love, even with her husband there, who I'm not a big fan of, but whatever. He's the guy in the chair, so that kind of works out. And just bouncing off the veteran thief, sometimes hero Felicia, off the rookie hero trying to figure everything out, MJ, is a really good balance. I really like it. After that is Spectacular Spider-Man number 2. I was confused. I thought this came out last week, but I didn't get it last week. I saw it this week. So if it did come out last week, I apologize. I'm reviewing it now. Written by Greg Weisman. Penciled by Humberto Ramos. Inked by Victor Olazaba. Colored by Edgar Delgado and lettered by Joe Caramagna. I love this book. The tone of this book is kind of like the Spider-Man tone for me, which is the really goofiness, but also the drama being balanced out. And it's also Miles and Peter bouncing off of each other. Also, Humberto Ramos is one of the Spider-Man artists for me. I love his style, and I think it really works, especially when he's drawing people out of costume. They're very distinct. Seeing Kenny in this, I just popped immediately to see Kenny. I really like that. I love the art in this. I think it's really cool. And I love this story of Miles and Peter with all the complications they've been having in their relationship recently, to see them having to work together. I thought it was a really good idea. Really good book. And I like where it's going. I also like they brought back Vermin in a way. I think that's cool. And tied in Shift. There's a lot going on in this book. And big thumbs up. The great place to jump in if you just want a Spidey book. If you're like, I haven't checked in with Spider-Man for a while, this would be a great one to start with because it's only an issue 2 and I think you'd really enjoy it. And last Spidey book is the main Spidey book, Amazing Spider-Man 48. This one is written by Zeb Wells, art by Todd Knock, colors by Sonia Obak, and letter by Joe Caramagna. This book features Chasm and my rookie of the year last year, Hollow's Eve, two characters that I really, really like. And to see them in this and also to bounce them off Queen Goblin, very interesting, and what her motivations are, what she's trying to pull. I really like it. And I love that everything for Chasm and Hollow's Eve ends up coming down to, we just got to look after each other. Like, you worry about me, I'll worry about you. None of these people matter. That's really believable. And it's really good. I love these characters. There's big, big future for Hollow's Eve. I think she's a character that has amazing potential. Put her in like a Midnight Sun style story, like where she has to team up with some heroes reluctantly. I would buy the shit out of that book. Are you kidding me? Yeah, definitely. Really good book. All right, let's talk X books. Okay, so I'm going to go a little out of order here. Technically, in the read order, Wolverine 48 is next. Wolverine 48 is in the middle of these two, but I'm going to read it first. I'm going to review it first for a reason. And you'll figure out why. Wolverine 48 is written by Benjamin Percy and Victor Laval, penciled by Corey Smith, inked by Oren Jr., colored by Alex Sinclair, and lettered by Corey Petit. We are continuing the story, which I was kind of like, well, Creed's under control. How much story could possibly be left? Oh, plenty. Oh, there's plenty of story left. And is Creed under control? And what's Logan going to do now that he doesn't have powers? A lot of questions going into this, and some of it get answered in this, which I think is really good. Only 2 issues left, I think, so something climactic is going to happen, and I hope it's Dokken coming back to life, because that's the only thing I'm still mad about, because I love Dokken. All right, these are the 2 X-books tied directly into each other. It's literally part 1 and part 2, but also a side A and side B. So let's talk about them. First, Rise of the Powers of X number 4. This one is, again, that creative team, written by Karen Gillan, art by R.B. Silva, color by David Curiel, and letter by Clayton Cowles. So we see the after effects of Xavier's betrayal of the X-Men, specifically of Ascani, Rachel, shooting her down, not killing Moira, and seemingly allying with Mother Righteous. And we see that his purpose is making an alliance with Orcus, basically saying, kill the humans, just leave us alone. Just leave the mutants alone. Give us an island. And obviously, that's not all it is, but it does feel like a thing Xavier would do, because Xavier has made some really questionable decisions in the past, so I can't be like, oh, he would never. I'd be like, yeah, that's about right. So, really interesting story here, which then continues into the next issue, X-Men Forever 2. Now, as we get into this one, and the previous one, Xavier had to do some pretty questionable things to prove that he wants to work with Orcus. Going to this, written by Karen Gillan, art by Luca Maresca, colored by Federico Blee, and letter by Clayton Cowles, we find out that Xavier is like three steps ahead, and he knows what he has to do, and he knows that this is an important step and most likely an important sacrifice that he's going to have to make, and he understands that. I really like it. I thought it's a really great idea and really kind of messed up and deep in a sad way. But I'm getting more and more anxious about where we're going to go from here. Like, what's going to happen and who's going to make it? You know, I just, and then just this final confrontation that's built to in the end of this issue is just, it got me hot with anticipation. I cannot wait. So yeah, definitely always good. I know I don't even have to recommend X-Men books to you guys, because you know I love them. So just pick them up. And those are the issues that we had this week. Make sure to check us out on Twitter. You can find me at WHI Podcast Keith. You can find producer Liz at WHI Podcast Liz. You can find Josue at Josue Reads Josue. Make sure to check out the show itself at WHI Podcast. That is on Twitter, and that is the best place to keep up with us. You'll get an announcement whenever a new episode comes out. You get a list of every issue revealed and timestamps for each publisher. It is the best way to keep up with what we do. Also, check out our other show, Jukebox Vertigo, at Jukebox Vertigo. That is our musical playlist show that comes out about once a month, where we talk about different subjects, kind of discuss them in huss holes, and then we build a playlist at the end for you to experience what we think of each thing. So make sure to join us. The most recent episode we put out was about boy bands, and it was a lot of fun. So check that one out. Also, follow our network at Certain POV on Twitter, or at Certain POV Media. No, sorry, Certain POV Media on Twitter, or at certainpov.com. That is our network for Jukebox Vertigo. On there, you can find a whole list of podcasts. Some of them are archived, so you might find something that maybe you want something that you know is over, something that has an endpoint. Great, go for it. Maybe you want something ongoing. Try stuff like Men of Steel or Another Pass or Fun and Games. All a lot of fun. Check them all out. You might find your next favorite podcast. I know I did. Also, join the Discord once again at Certain PV Media on Twitter or at certainpv.com. There is a link to our Discord. Join there and talk to us about nerdy shit, because we love doing that. And to be honest, everybody's really cool. The only rule is really to just respect each other and don't be a dick. And we have a blast on there. We have Song of the Day. We have in-depth discussions about comic stuff. We talk about TTRPGs, video games, movies, everything you could possibly imagine. So make sure to check them out there. Don't forget to bag, board, and box your new treasures, and we'll see you next week with a new batch of beautiful books. Stay safe and read more comics.
Hey, Nerf Herders.
You sure you want to go with that?
Hey, everyone?
There we go. More inviting.
Have you ever had a movie that you really wanted to love, but something holds you back?
Or one that you did love in spite of a flaw?
Well, I'm Case Aiken.
And I'm Sam Alisea.
And on Another Pass, we sit down with cool guests to look at movies that we find fascinating.
But flawed.
And we try to imagine what could have been done when they were made to give them that little push.
We're not experts. We just believe in criticism.
Constructive criticism.
Sure.
So come take Another Pass at some movies with us.
And every now and then, we can celebrate movies that did it on their own, too.
You can find us at certainpov.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Pass it on.